Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There is a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. Did you know that for only $27 per month, you can now gain unlimited access to more than $2,000 worth of resources, courses, and video archives, all built to help you build a better business, be a better leader, and live a happier life as a small firm architect? And we're adding more every month. Learn more about Entree Architect Academy at entrearchitect.com. You're listening to Entree Architect Podcast, and this is episode 176. Welcome back to the Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. Whether you have plans to someday start your own firm, whether you're in the process of launching a startup, or you might be an experienced small firm architect just trying to make a difference, this podcast is for you. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. I'm back with another episode from our new podcast series called, well, it's not so new anymore, is it? We're in, got a bunch of these in the can now. It's a podcast series called The Entrepreneur Architect, where I'm interviewing members of the Entree Architect community. Real live small firm architects telling their stories, inspiring, motivational stories. We talk about where people learned about architecture, how they became architects, and what they're doing today to give back to society as architects, as small firm architects, as entrepreneur architects. Today is a very inspiring story. I spoke to a new friend of mine. We've been following each other on social media for a while. Finally got to speak to her, and I am so excited to introduce Dani Cesario, entrepreneur architect. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, FreshBooks, NCARB, BQE Software, and RCAT. And I'm going to share more about these great companies and organizations later in the show, but as we get started here, just take a quick note to schedule some time this week to go visit each one of them and let them know that their support is appreciated by us, the Entree Architect community. Dani Cesario, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
It's great having you here. Dani is the 333rd Black female architect in history. I love that. I love that you announced that right off the bat, and I love that you are 333rd in history. That's pretty awesome. Hailing from Manchester, England, she became enamored at a very early age with New York City and the buildings that contributed to its architectural prestige. Dani's professional career began in tandem with her scholarly pursuits at the City College of New York Spitzer School of Architecture. There she served as treasurer of the AIAS CCNY chapter and earned the J. Max Bond Jr. Memorial Scholarship while working on complex public sector projects throughout the city. She's currently the youngest project architect at Francis Kaufman Architects, managing the execution of multifaceted healthcare projects. So Dani, I just gave a little bit about you. I want you to sort of fill in the blanks, go back to where you discovered architecture, what inspired you to become an architect, and share your origin story.
Okay, so as you mentioned, I moved here from England when I was about 6 years old. My parents are from either side of the pond. So my brother, sister, and I were raised on both sides. So pretty much every year we would move back and forth between one or the other. So I was raised probably equally between England and America. The spaces for us always changed. So home was always where my family was, but the actual built structure of home was different, was varying. Houses, apartments, all sorts of things. And on a wider scope, like looking at the city that you lived in. So being from Manchester, which is post-industrial and with a deep history, and then seeing the scale shift when we came to New York for the first time with all the skyscrapers and all of that, I was pretty interested in the way that space was made and how that resonated with different people across time. There are places in Manchester that and in London that still hold specific memories to me that, you know, you or somebody else won't have. So in essence, space is a bit of a time capsule.
Yeah.
For your own life and for the lives of the people that interact with it.
Yeah. So you had this sort of two sides of the Atlantic experience, came to America inspired by the buildings in New York City. Where did it take you from that point to where you are now? Where did you go to? You went to school in New York, right?
Yes. So when I was educated on both sides of the pond too. So I've got, you know, GCSEs and finished secondary school there and here as well. So I've graduated from high school. I always wanted to come back to the city though. Not so much for a preference of England versus America, but I was just always drawn to the energy that New York City had. And so when I was sending out my college applications, I wanted to stay fairly close by. My mom at the time had different designs. She wanted me to go back to England and do my education there. But it didn't feel right to me. So I got into City College and a few other schools. But I wanted to stay within the city. And it so turned out that when I'd gone to England, as my mom had wanted me to, following high school completion here, they actually called and said that my spot was open and I had a full scholarship and all of that. So that was my leverage for coming back to the city that I fell in love with when I was 6 years old. And from then it was a little bit of a tug of war between my parents and I in terms of, you know, where I wanted to be and where I sort of wanted to lay down my roots, because, you know, by 18 I was a bit over the moving back and forth.
Yeah.
And just wanting to have some consistency on my own terms, like what felt right to me, to Dani.
Yeah.
So City College was it for me. And after the first year there, at the time I was commuting back and forth between New Jersey, where we had moved finally, and New York City. And I found out the hard way what architecture school entailed, the long hours and long studio hours, and then finding myself on the trains at 2 o'clock in the morning. It just wasn't really conducive, I felt, for the education that I wanted to sort of immerse myself into it. So I spoke to my parents again and said, look, I want to move close by. And actually, along with a friend, was able to find an apartment on Convent Avenue, which is the same street that City College is located on.
Yeah.
And it so happened that eventually the school built a brand new building, and it was actually closer to my apartment. So I got to live there, be educated there, and work relatively close by. And I think that for me, that was, it was a pivotal moment in my personal life, and also in my career in education, because I think it was the first time that I established for myself exactly what I wanted as an architect and as a young woman. So that was interesting. It was an interesting journey. I should also like backtrack and say, from the time from as early as I can remember, I was always drawing and creating something out of nothing. So I would take a blank piece of paper and, you know, draw people and draw places and all sorts of things. Like I just remember sort of laying on the floor wherever we were and sketching and drawing, always with a pencil in hand. My dad is an engineer, so he knew all about technical drawings and isometrics and all of that stuff. That didn't really appeal to me quite as much, but I think that he and my mom saw that I had an eye for it, and they sort of fostered that. I will also say that in London, when we lived there, there was a Gothic church at the very top of a massive hill that we'd walk up to when on our way home. It was called Church Hill. It's in southeast London. And I remember asking my mom how it was built, who built it, how long did it take, and like all these questions that you're not really expecting from a six-year-old. She didn't have all the answers, but she really did point me towards where I could find them. So between those conversations and, you know, the moving and also coming to City College, I think it was a culmination of finding out all of those answers for myself and setting a path forward for the years that would come.
Yeah. Do you remember the moment or the period? Because it sounds like architecture has always been part of you. You know, as far back as you can remember that you were drawing and creating and inspired by architecture. Do you remember the time where you said, or you learned what an architect was and decided that's what I want to be? Or has it just always been part of who you are, and it just, that's, was never an option that that's not what you would be?
It's always been something for me. It's always been the career that I wanted. So I knew at six. To your question of have I always known what it was and all of that, I'm still figuring out what exactly an architect does. It's not that I'm not sure, but there are so many facets to our profession that, you know, it's multidisciplinary. You can find yourself in so many different roles and still be an architect. I think it's more in the process, you know, that we go through, the problem solving, which everybody brings up, but also not just solving the problem, but doing it beautifully and elegantly and touching on your experiences and your knowledge base and speaking to people. The pivotal moment for me was being on that hill going up to Church Rise. I remember that, and I remember the feeling that I felt in my heart. Like it's just like whenever you go someplace, and I remember seeing you at the tour for the Calatrava building when we were at convention at the conference in Orlando. And it's like the feeling you feel when you see a gorgeous piece of architecture, something that's been well executed and well thought out, and you know, the people that are inside of it are enjoying it. It's that, I guess the only way to describe it is that like warm fullness of heart, I guess.
Yeah.
That's the best way.
Yeah.
So that was what I felt at Church Rise, and that's what I continually strive for in my profession and in all the other things I'm involved with.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I love that. So you became an architect, and that's one big goal that you achieved, and a very big goal, because that's been a goal your whole life. Has there been any other big goals that you've sort of focused on, set that goal and achieved it? Can you share a story about that and how you achieved that goal?
That's a very good question. So, I think starting to work as early as I did, I started working a little bit more than part-time, but less than full-time in my second year of university. And I think the exposure to the field helped me figure out what I wanted in terms of my own career. I think goals, though, I mean, one of the biggest goals, I'll say, was for me to, like you said, become an architect. And that was almost 3 years ago that I finally completed it. So it was a 20-odd year long journey between, I know it's not called IDP anymore, but AXP.
Like
The first IDP application that I'd sent in was in paper form. So I'd started a while ago. And I think the goal for me was always that. And then after I met that goal, I sort of found myself in the, what now? What do I do now? What do I obsess about now? Like, what is the driving force, you know? Because, you know, you work so hard.
I can relate very, very strongly to that. Because I also learned very early in my life about architecture and decided when I was 10 that I'm going to be an architect and put the blinders on and never looked at anything else and hit all my goals along the way. And when I achieved it, I had that same feeling. Now what?
Yeah. But the funny thing that happened in my life was that some of the things that I didn't know were goals for me just sort of happened. You know, like you make a plan and then life happened. So I met my husband now when I was in second year of school. Not finishing school was never an option for me. We ended up getting engaged in, I think, in fourth year. And it was somewhat, it was more about being aware of what felt right to me and what felt, what made me feel fulfilled. I think that that's been the driving force through my life. So eventually I was a wife. And then after that, I became a mom. And the first time I became a mom also coincided with when I was taking my exams. So the goals aren't, it's not that it's a moving target, but your goals, I think they evolve as you evolve. So what did it mean to become a wife? What did it mean to become a mom eventually? What did it mean to become an architect? And I think that my goal became, after all of those like different titles and responsibilities, after I'd sort of accrued them, what does that mean for myself? Like, you know, you're like mommy and honey and all of these different things, right? But at the base of it, you're always, you know, Danny, or you're Mark, you're always yourself, and staying true to that core person for you, that 10-year-old. And for me, that 6-year-old at the top of the hill, staying true to that as your life becomes more complicated and more rich in so many ways. And as you grow up, I think that that's become the goal for me. Not selfishly, but just being able to like identify still, regardless of your responsibilities, what is the core for you, like what's important.
That's,
you
know? Such a good answer. I love that answer. Let's take a quick break here to say thank you to our platform sponsors here at Entree Architect, RCAT, FreshBooks, NCARB, and BQE Software. You already know all about RCAT and their free BIM objects and their CAD details and their specifications and product information, all free, ready for you to use. Well, today I want to share something new from RCAT. It's called Charette. Charette is a tool for sharing and collaborating with your colleagues and clients online in real time. You can upload photos and files, share specs and product information directly from the RCAT database, as well as from other sources on the internet. I've been playing with Charette in beta for a while now, and it's really cool. And now it's available to you. I encourage you to go check it out. Visit Arcat online and click the Charette icon right there on the homepage. And like everything offered at Arcat, Charette is a free tool for us small firm architects too. Learn more at entrearchitect.com/Arcat. 192 hours. You wish you had that much free time? That works out to about 2 business days every month. And when you're a small firm architect using FreshBooks cloud accounting software, that's the amount of administration time that you could save in 2017. That's time that you can spend doing the things you love, like being an architect. FreshBooks makes it simple to send invoices, post your expenses automatically, track your time for your whole team by project, and get organized with reports, communication, and notifications. Sign up for a free 30-day unrestricted trial and get ready for the simplest way to be more productive, organized, and most importantly, get paid faster. Visit entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks to access FreshBooks for free. And be sure to enter Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Do you know someone in your firm who's always dreamed of getting licensed, but was unable to complete the experience requirements? Well, maybe that person's you. Now you can get back on track with NCARB's new AXP portfolio. With this option, seasoned professionals can complete the Architectural Experience Program, the AXP, formerly known as the IDP, by submitting an online portfolio. Along with meeting your state's education and examination requirements, the portfolio will help you and your employees get one step closer to becoming a licensed architect. Learn more about NCARB's AXP portfolio at entrearchitect.com/NCARB. One of the most often requested resources here at Entree Architect is project management software. How do we keep our projects and our people organized while we grow as entrepreneur architects? BQE Software, an AIA Advantage partner, and the makers of ArchiOffice will show us how. ArchiOffice is the only office and project management software designed specifically for architects. It will help us manage people and projects and allow us to focus on designing great architecture. Whether you're working remotely or on site, ArchiOffice allows you to monitor the status of your projects and tasks and send out invoices in an accurate and timely manner. Entree Architect podcast listeners can get a fully functional 15-day trial of ArchiOffice today at entrearchitect.com/BQE. Arcat, FreshBooks, NCARB, and BQE Software, please visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. Through that process, I'm sure there's been struggles. Can you talk about some of the struggles that you've experienced through that process?
So I think, the struggle. I think a lot of your listeners and you as well will know that the struggle, there's no specific struggle. It's all scale to scale and different magnitude. I mean, in a given week, it's 100 different struggles, and the actual struggle is how to manage all of the struggles and still overcome and still remain positive and still keep going. So it's a bit of a struggle of the mind, and I think we've all had those moments in bed where it's like 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, and then your anxiety might get the best of you. And you start worrying about work and, your home life, and am I doing a good job? And, am I just really crap? Those sorts of things. So it's overcoming that and going, keep going, trying to keep going and making opportunities out of the struggles that you face. I think as you mentioned before, as a black female architect, a woman of color in an industry that doesn't necessarily have the best representation of other people like myself. And then adding on to that, also being relatively young, like on the lower side of 30, I've just turned 30. And also being a mom and all of that, I think some people will see that as a struggle or things that may limit you. But I think that those experiences and those responsibilities add a certain richness to the architecture that you provide. It provides like another layer of sensitivity and empathy to the people that you serve in. And I think that that's become something that I'm very passionate about, you know, giving voice to the people that, you know, maybe they've just finished school and they just, maybe they've run out of steam or they can't be bothered anymore. Love architecture, but probably it's going to become a hobby now and less of a career pursuit. I want to tell those people that the struggle is similar for many of us. But there is something to be said about coming out on the other side of it and, you know, earning your seat at the table and being able to represent, you know, what so many people will see as a minority demographics or minority like aspects and things like that. I think that you have to keep showing up and you have to keep striving forward and taking all of those struggles, packing them under your belt, and making them make you stronger, empowering yourself.
Yeah. Was there any specific moment that was an aha moment, something that just sort of appeared, something that happened, and everything sort of pivoted from that moment forward?
Yeah, I touched on it earlier. It was when I was 18 and I sort of fought for my independence and what I wanted, and it's no fault of my parents. I think I understand now, being on the side. Being a, geez, it's hard, isn't it? Yeah. Understanding as a parent, like ultimately you want the best for your children, but sometimes as parents we sort of we enforce what we think is best because we don't really want our children to make mistakes.
Yeah.
And I'm my mom's firstborn and, you know, a girl as well. So she's extra protective.
Yeah.
Same with my dad, but my dad is, you know, the cool dad, you know what I mean? And I think that pivotal moment, that aha moment for me was like, if you want something, if you really want it, you have to prove, A, that you want it. You have to prove that you're worthy of the opportunity to take it and that you're willing to do whatever it takes. So I wanted my own place. I wanted my own place in the city. And that summer I had three different jobs. Blockbuster, when it was still around. I worked at Blockbuster. I worked as an intern in an architectural expediting firm. And I also sold knives that summer because I really wanted that space, that mind space. I wanted my own space.
The entrepreneur in you, yeah.
To then be able to, I guess, create space. So that was a pivotal moment. It was a little bit of a tug of war, but my parents allowed me the space to sort of fall on my face and let me know that if I did actually like fall on my face, they'd be there to pick me up and drop and dust me off. I think that changed a lot for me because it stuck to the theme of, you know, you want something, go out and get it. There's going to be struggles for everybody and you can moan about it. But then what are you doing after you've had your little whinging session? What are you doing about it? So that was an aha moment for me. And that's a theme that I try and continue as I.
Are you doing anything like blogging or any sort of anything to share your message?
Yes, I wouldn't call it blogging. I'm very active on Instagram. Mm-hmm. I think that's been my platform. I really enjoy the fact that quite a lot of it is visual. And if you fancy writing something to go along with the visuals that you put up, you can do. It's not as talkative as some of the other platforms, but I think that as visual people, we appreciate things like Instagram and places where you can sort of see rather than just sort of reading what we're doing. So one of the things that I'm involved in, as I mentioned before, about giving a voice to the people that may not have the same opportunity, is I'm chair of diversity and inclusion at my local Center for Architecture. So it's the one for New York, which is one of the largest ones.
Yes, yeah.
If not the largest. And on diversity and inclusion right now, one of the initiatives that we're working on, we actually received a research grant for it, is trying to figure out what's happening to our profession. So we've changed in terms, we've evolved in terms of technology. You know, like many of us now, my office is 100% Revit, and we like our consultants to use 100% Revit. But even though we have changed the technology, we're essentially doing the same things that the person back on the drawing board with the Mayline was doing. We haven't, we've changed technology, but we haven't necessarily updated our culture as a profession. And my co-chair and I, when we attend things at the Center for Architecture, we look around, and there are still the same issues that we saw or that were spoken about when 50 years ago, you know, still very much so. And we do our bit in trying, in terms of trying to encourage the other architects of color or of different experiences that have interesting stories to come and join us, and let them know that they also have a seat at the table. Because if you don't show up, there's not very much that you can do. Or if you just sort of leave yourself, exclude yourself, there's not much that you can do. So, sorry, back to the research grant. We're trying to figure out what's happened between academia and the workplace. First year of any architectural school studio, pretty much, it's pretty diverse there. Like, you know, in the basement of Shepherd Hall at City College, you looked around, there's like 125 of us scrambling for a space and a table and whatnot. And there's all sorts, you know, it's about 50 to 60% women. There's all shades and cultures represented. As you know, in a five-year program, the graduating class for us was about like 30 odd, like just slightly under 40. So something obviously happens in academia. Maybe people find out that it's not the path for them and they want to pursue something else. And, but there are also the people that want to, but may not have, don't feel like they've got the support to do so. Then something else happens when you get to the workplace. So of my graduating class of, you know, maybe 37, something like that. We'll say that for argument's sake. I would say that maybe 15 to 20 are working in architecture firms in a traditional capacity. Others have gone to the private sector. And we're trying to find out what the issue of attrition really is. Why are people leaving? So my teammates and I at the Center for Architecture and within Diversity and Inclusion Committee have generated a survey to figure out beyond the demographics, why are people moving on? Like, what is our membership base right now? And New York City is, you know, famed for being the crosswalk of all sorts of people from different places, myself included. We're trying to use New York City as a microcosm and saying, like, look, if we're having this issue in New York City, how is it in the Midwest? How is it further afield? You know, it's more of a study on the state of the profession and what we can do to encourage our bright young minds to stay. So,
yeah. Have you connected with Rosa Shang at Equity by Design?
We are, and we're actually using her work through Equity by Design, which was previously, I think, the missing 32%.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah. So I saw her also at convention, and we touched base and all of that. We've also had her host her current work before she becomes president next year in San Francisco. We've had her host her recent work at the Center for Architecture as well. So we're in touch, and we're using some of her data as well as a comparison for where we are right now in 2017 the convention. I need to stop calling it convention because they've rerun.
Yes,
sorry.
I do the same thing.
The design conference, the AIA design conference, next year is going to be held in New York City. It's also the 50th anniversary of Whitney Young's, pivotal speech. And we want to touch on all the work that's been done. Like, diversity and inclusion is not necessarily a new idea, but we are trying to take on new approaches. It's not a case of color or gender. It's a bigger issue, like caregiving, the things that make your story slightly different to everybody else's. We recently had Joel Saunders come in and present his stalled initiative, his work on that, which is basically talking about the ways in which restrooms and other service spaces like that do not necessarily cater to people who may have to caregive or are differently capable, physically. And those are other elements of diversity. So myself and Vanessa Alisea and my co-chair, we're very passionate about extending our reach beyond the obvious, that there's a graphic that AIA National is shared about that sort of tip of the iceberg, the things that you see that make us very obviously different, right?
Yeah.
And then there's the things below the surface of the water that are much more deep set, like, how were you raised and where did you live and all of those things. And we want to shine a light on that as well, and understand that the people that we're catering for, our client base, really, they're evolving. And as a profession, for us to be able to fully service them, we need to be able to do the same and not just like harp on about the same issues from 50 years ago, but we have to cast a wider net also.
Yeah. I love your message and I love your approach. If there's anything that I can do to help you with anything you're doing, let me know. I'm happy to share my community and my platform with you guys to do whatever you want to do. It's a very important issue that you're talking about. And I really love the message all the way through this conversation that we've had. I really appreciate the way you're approaching it. Let's get into some quick questions. And we don't need to do all of them. A bunch of them you've already answered. So let's go down to what makes you happy. Other than architecture, what makes you happy? Any specific hobbies or things you like doing?
I do love to travel. We recently went on a quick holiday, my family and I, and it's nice to see different places and also see how my daughter, soon to be two daughters, interact in a new space. I love that. I do love traveling. I still like to draw. I like reading. That sort of thing.
What's the best advice you've ever received?
Wherever you are, wherever you go, there you are. That's how it goes. It doesn't necessarily matter how much your surroundings change. You're pretty much the same person. I do believe that we adapt, we evolve. But if you're one of those people that's like, I've worked in a small firm, I hate it here. Then you go to a large firm, you hate it there as well. I think you might need to sort of turn inward. And yeah. look at what the constant is. So that's the best advice I've gotten.
Do you have one personal habit or a daily routine that contributes to your success?
Yes. I carry a notebook pretty much every place. Everyone that knows me knows I'm always writing things down. So I'm a visual person, but I have to learn through doing as well, like a kinesthetic learner. So writing things down helps me organize them in a visual sense, and it really does help me to stay organized and be able to sort of track progress of things. You mentioned goals earlier.
Yeah.
It's nice to look back at an old notebook from, 5 years ago and see what you were thinking and see how far you've gotten now.
Yeah, I have notebooks like that as well, and I love going back to them years and years ago and look at those – the little seeds of the ideas that have actually blossomed into my architecture firm and here at Entree Architect. little things that I never imagined that this is what would come from that little seed. It's really a great thing to do, is to write those ideas down when they come into your mind.
It really is. Yeah.
How about a recommended app or an internet resource?
When I was doing my AREs, I came across Life of an Architect.
Bob Borson. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Love him to bits. I still haven't gotten the chance to meet him in person, but he encouraged me to keep going with the pursuit of my license, I should say. And it was also a really good tool to know, like, what to expect. I kind of wish I'd come across it. I don't even know if it was around then, but when I was in school, like, sort of what to expect from a firm, and realizing that it's not all drafting, it's not all of any one thing. It's, you know, construction administration, which is my favorite part of my job. And I think that was a really useful tool. And then there's a, I know on Instagram, she goes by Jenny PDX. She had a blog a while back about her progress through doing the AREs. And it was super helpful to me, like, to know that I wasn't alone. Then, of course, ARE coach. I know this all sounds like ARE driven, but as you know, it's a very taxing examination and, like, process to go through. And, you know, if you are one of those people that has failed, it can be very discouraging. So those were resources that really helped me through.
Great. Do you have a recommended book? And why would you recommend it?
I actually just, I'm still finishing it up. The Art of Risk by Kate Sukel. It speaks about being on the precipice of something new, and you're not really sure what it is. It can be like career, or it can be personal. I think she talks about both and sort of taking that leap. But as I've said in other places, I think that, you know, risk is important, and it's not something that you should shy away from. You have to sometimes take a leap and just hope that you're going to be okay on the other side of it. But when you know that you're banking on, like, you know, the future of yourself and the future of the things that are important to you, it's definitely something that's worth taking. And once you've sort of faced that, you know, daunting fear, it's something that you can always look back on and say, you know, well, I did that once, you know, I can do anything. Not to get a massive ego, but just to sort of encourage yourself through.
Yeah, those incremental successes give you confidence to take the next leap. Just one small step at a time. You reached your goals. What is one thing that an entrepreneur architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow? So that's sort of a quick thing that somebody can do to see some progress in a relatively short amount of time.
You touched on it earlier, which is sort of having your blinders on. I think as an architect, we have to look up. My hashtag on Instagram is always looking up, and it's literal, you know. As an architect, I go to a restaurant and I'm looking at how they've done right. The ceiling, and, you know, is it a bit of a mess, or have they done it really well, elegantly? You know, is it something to behold? And it's also the fact that, you know, we tend to sort of look down at our laptops or our drawing boards or whatever tools you use and just sort of zone in. But we also have to zoom out and look around and look up. And looking up is also part of being optimistic. So I would say for anybody who is at a transitional period, whether you're working in a firm like myself or whether you are, you know, going off and doing your own venture, it's to continue to be positive about the thing that you love, find a passion within that and pursue it. Maybe it's not all within your, you know, the job that pays you. Maybe it's like getting involved in different organizations. That was something for me. Like, I am passionate about diversity and inclusion, and I'm passionate about the future of architecture. So it's things like that. And also getting involved. We can whine from here until forever about all of the things that are wrong in architecture, but there, you have to look and say, you know, well, why am I still doing it? And if there's any part of you that still wants to do it and still like gets a fire in your belly to do it, then, you know, show up, come to a few things. You know, I don't like to use the word networking so much. It's a bit ick, but go out and meet people and try and make meaningful connections. I think FaceTime is very important. You don't know who you're going to meet. And just get out there. In summary, yes. get out there and always look up.
Yeah. You have been very inspirational here in this conversation, and you've given lots and lots of pieces of advice and guidance. Is there one last piece of guidance that you'd like to share with the audience, and then we'll wrap things up?
I'll give you the short version, which is stay true to yourself. It doesn't matter what the expectations of the family that you came from are, or what the family that you've made are. At the end of the day, you have to be true to what is important to you. Like when you look at yourself in the mirror, or you're, you know, laying your head on your pillow, are you pleased with what you've done? And if not, then, you know, you might have to change a few things, but stay true to yourself. Whatever stage in life you are in, do what feels right to you. Follow your dreams, follow your passions, and take a moment every now and then to sort of look around and check in with yourself, for sure.
Good stuff. Great stuff. What's the best way somebody can connect with you if what we're talking about here resonates with somebody and they want to reach out to you and talk or just ask you a question? What's the best way to connect?
I basically live at the Center for Architecture in New York, and a lot of our diversity and inclusion stuff is on the Center for Architecture's calendar. I'm always out and about. Probably less so in the next few months, but you can almost always find me on Instagram. I post pretty much every day, and it's stuff from my personal life and my private. I don't necessarily separate them. So don't be surprised if you see a picture of a building next to a picture of my daughter, or, you know, something I come across. You can almost always find me on Instagram at Wallendob, and you can add the link and so on.
Yeah, we'll have it on the show notes. That's how we connected. I connected to you through Instagram, started following you. I think you're a fascinating person, and this confirms it. I really enjoyed our conversation here, and I really, really appreciate you for sharing your knowledge here at Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Mark, and we'll keep talking.
Absolutely. If you liked what we shared here today, share this episode with a friend. The link is entrearchitect.com/episode176, and all the show notes, everything that we talked about, Danny and I, is there. Complete show notes, a link to download this episode will be found at entrearchitect.com/episode176. And don't forget to go visit. Go as soon as you share this episode with a friend, then go to entrearchitect.com and check out what we're doing over there. Check out Entree Architect Academy, our private online membership program built for you. It'll help you build a better business. You can do it. Entrearchitect.com, go check it out. We have 3 different levels, all different ways of joining, different price levels. I think you should go check it out. It'll change the way you do architecture. It'll change your business. It'll change your life. EntreeArchitect.com. My name is Mark R. LePage, and I am an entrepreneur architect, and I encourage you to go build a better business so you can be a better architect. Love, learn, and share. Share what you know. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.